Welcome to We Are Technologies User Friendly with host Bill Sickens, technology architect.
And I am your host, Bill Sickens. This is User Friendly 2.0. Joining me today is my co-host, Gretchen. Hello.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I am well. It's another great day here, and I'm finally over this cold, so I sound normal again. I want to thank everybody who was asking about our health. Yeah, we did go through a little bit of a summer a cold or whatever it was. I'm just glad it's behind us, and we can now move on and enjoy the great summer here. So we've got a number of topics today. We're going to be hitting on the news and some different things like that. We have a FEMA interview where they're going to tell us about what to do in the event of an emergency using technology. Funny thing about that, radio, as old school as it might be, is actually one of the most important things in the arsenal for being able to get information out during the middle of a disaster. But we're going to talk about some of the other options that are out there and some of the things that you can do. Upcoming events on the show. We're going to be at Black Hat this year. We did a special edition last year. Reporter Chaz Wellington is actually going to be on site and covering a number of different things. We've got the Rose City Comic-Con coming up, the Silicon Valley Comic-Con, and just added to the lineup for this October is going to be the Virtual Reality Conference in San Francisco. So we got a lot of good things coming on here. And next week, join us to find out about how job recruitment has changed using technology. We're going to have an expert on the air that's going to talk about how you can find your next job using just the computer. All right, on to the news. Now, before we get into our normal news segment here, I've been asked to cover something, and I can't believe I'm actually having to talk about this, but such is life. We have been asked specifically to let everybody know not to do a raid on Area 51. I actually got this email from the military this morning asking it to be included on most of the pop culture shows that are out there. So what this is, just really quickly, is something that started on Facebook. It's been trending. It's kind of gone viral. Area 51 is actually the Groom Lake base in southern Nevada. It was at one time a top secret military base. Now they do a lot of airplane testing and different things like that out there. And they was this plan to come up to raid it to look for aliens. And they were asking, please don't do that. It won't end well. All right, Gretchen, what do we have on the news?
All right. Computer pioneer Dr. Fernando Corbato dies. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
So he died at 93, I believe it was. And he is the engineer, worked for MIT all of his life, that came up with the concept of using a username and a password to get onto your computer. So as much as that's just something we kind of take for granted now, it is something that had to have been engineered at one time. He was a physicist. He put this together and did a really good job, and it's something in his legacy that we still use.
Streaming platform Viveport comes to VR devices. So what does that mean?
VR is virtual reality, and what this is a system for the headsets that's aiming at least to be a Netflix of virtual reality games and other content. So you subscribe to it. It's about $15 a month to get onto this thing. There's no contracts or that type of thing, and you can get anything that they have on their system. Now, like a Netflix or anything else, it is subject and limited to what they actually have. So you do want to look at that before doing anything with them. I've tried it out with my Oculus Rift, and it works really well. I got access to everything I wanted. So another subscription, but maybe something that will save you money in the end.
U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin worried about Facebook Libra cryptocurrency. Another one?
Another one that's worried about it. This is something that Facebook has come up with. We've actually talked about it a little bit before. And what they want to do is have their own money as a cryptocurrency. I mean, what could go wrong with that, right?
Yeah.
The concern here is that there isn't regulation on it to stop things like, money laundering, theft, and all the rest of it. So the idea of this is something that's been created along the lines of a Bitcoin, but internal to Facebook. The value of your currency evidently comes from Facebook, so there's no country or anything like that backing it up like you would with real money. And there are all kinds of concerns. The concern isn't just here in the United States either, but it's the latest one all over the world. Governments have been talking about this because it could be used in so many just ways that we don't want to have money being used. And without the controls on it, the other question is will it maintain its value, or will it be something else that will just kind of die after a little while? So those are the concerns that are being voiced right now, and whether or not this actually takes off is going to depend on how all of this gets handled.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about San Diego Comic-Con.
So we're right in the middle of it right now. It actually ends tomorrow. It started last Thursday. So San Diego Comic-Con is the biggest Comic-Con in the world. At least that's what they claim it to be. And we've been down there many times. We are going to cover it again next year. And when we've seen it in the past, it is definitely a large Comic-Con. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah, it was huge.
Some of the unique things down there that we've seen in the past are items that you can't buy elsewhere, exclusive things made for Comic-Con, like the Lego thing that Jeremy was after and some other stuff like that. The event is in San Diego. It is absolutely huge. When you get in there, it's just, I mean, you do need the 4 or 5 day run of it to be able to actually see everything. The other thing that's interesting about it is they do panels. And this is something that's actually been poked fun at on shows like Big Bang Theory, because getting into them can take an entire day.
I know, I remember that. Netgear, Arlo removes notification function. Tell me about this.
So this is something that has kind of annoyed a lot of people. And we got a question in about 2 weeks ago on this. Plus, I know that you and I have been having trouble with it. And what this comes down to is the Netgear Arlo is a home video security system that's actually very good. It's completely wireless. You do have to change the batteries. And up until very recently, when the batteries were low, I believe it was a 15% threshold, it would send you an email or a message through the app that your batteries are tired, go change them. And this has
and that was really useful.
Yeah, it was really useful. And it is now gone. Such is life, I guess, but it's just something to be aware of. All right, so that's our news for today. And our next topic on here is something that we get a little bit sci-fi. Kind of cool. If anybody that's watched Star Trek or a number of other science fiction shows have seen the idea of a transporter. And through the use of something called quantum entanglement, that's actually been done for the first time about a week ago.
So that's what we've really got, cool.
It's a test situation that was done in China. Now, they aren't beaming up Scotty yet or anything like that, but it's a beginning of it where they've actually beamed up a molecule from the ground to a satellite in orbit and back. So they were actually able to send a piece of matter to space and bring it back using the idea of teleportation. So everything has to start somewhere. And whether it's our computer technology or any of the different things we use, you always, or not always, but generally start small and then kind of build on that. And this has actually been able to prove now that the idea is theoretically possible.
That's really amazing. I think a lot of people have been looking forward to seeing a lot of things from Star Trek actually happen.
Yeah, and it's, well, we kind of have. We had the flip phones, of course, that were based on the communicators, and that's actually one of the few things I like about the reboot in the movie is that the comm badge actually works like that. You can be on Kronos in the Klingon Empire and call home and have an instant connection, which wasn't something they had in the original series, so... you know, we've seen a lot of different types of technologies coming out of that. The beginnings of AI with the smart assistants, that was based in many ways on the Star Trek computer. So seeing some things that we're moving into kind of a next generation of technology and seeing things like a transporter. And one of the other things that science is working on is the idea of pattern replication. Now, again, we're not able to beam large stuff across the globe yet or anything like that. But even being able to successfully prove that conceptually this is possible is kind of a big deal. And I see where they're going to be building on this and doing some more things. A big part of what we're dealing with now is power sources for these things. The amount of power that's used and required by these type of technologies can be very immense, even theoretically. So we have to continue to build that up, continue to refine how we produce and use energy and all of that kind of stuff. And really, at the end of the day, I think that we're going to see a lot more of these things kind of come to light. So, Gretchen, tell me, what do you know about quantum entanglement?
Oh, just tons about it. I am just I don't know anything.
It sounds like it. So, just very briefly, the area of physics, quantum physics, that this is based on is a type of math that is not necessarily possible to prove. I think that would be the best way to state it. But it is actually a science, quantum physics. Is something that's been out there for a while now, something that a lot of different scientists and physicists are working on. And it has actually been able to prove a lot of different things, build on some of Einstein's theories, stuff like that, that's in standard model physics. So what we're seeing is a situation here where that kind of technology, which is also something that was talked about in science fiction shows like Star Trek, and more recently, the new sci-fi show that makes fun of Star Trek, Orville. Took me a minute to remember that.
Orville, yeah.
Yeah. Which actually I've kind of really enjoyed too. Both of them use that. You have a quantum drive. It's kind of a word that's thrown about for everything, but it is actually a science and actually something that is bringing things in to be able to work. So that's our kind of cool topic of the day, at least as far as technology is going and that type of a thing. Now, another question that's come in a lot is, how do you get involved? And the way that you do that is go to our website, userfriendlyshow.com, or go on social media, One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter. Send us your questions. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0, and we are here with our question and answer section. How do you ask a question, you ask? Well, that's a question. You'll have to submit it. And the way you do that is over our social media at One User Friendly on Facebook and Twitter, userfriendlyshow.com online. Want to hear something? Did you miss something? You want to listen to it again? Did you miss the show? Don't do that. But if you had that happen, I know emergencies are out there. You can play our podcast at any time, and that's on theanswerportland.com. Click on podcasts, click on User Friendly 2.0. So Gretchen, I think we have some questions today. In fact, I'm pretty sure of it. And what do we got?
Okay, this one's from Tammy. And it says, my daughter wants to learn how to code. She is 16. Where can she start online?
Well, Tammy, thank you for your question. And I know we actually talked about this a little bit after you submitted it as well. And we've been doing a little bit of research on this for you. And one of the things that we are working on getting is someone to come on the show and talk specifically about one of these programs. But for right now, to give you an answer to your question, there are a number of different things that are offered out there from some of the big companies, the big tech companies, on down to the little mom-pops that teach coding to kids. And these programs are really, really interesting and something that's, you know, something worth checking into to get involved in. And we, like I say, we will get someone on the air here in a little bit. But if you go online and do some searching for the area that you're in, and we didn't talk about where you were actually calling from, but check it out. Look at technology companies. Here in the Portland area, some of the bigger companies definitely offer this. There's programs by Apple and Microsoft and then everything in between. So it's definitely something to get going on. I believe that coding is as important as learning as a foreign language when you're younger. It's easier to pick up. And once you learn one set of code, just like a language, you're going to get everything else a lot easier. It worked for me and it works for a lot. So definitely a good question. Definitely something to be concerned about.
Okay, our second question is there a local cosplay group in my area? And this comes from Tristan in Seattle, Washington.
Yeah, so specifically to Seattle, the answer is yes, but that answer actually carries to most places. Did a little bit of checking for this online as well, and we're going to be posting the specifics to this up on the social media, and I will respond back to your email with it as well. But basically, this is what we found out. In the Seattle area and also in the Portland area, it's very similar. There not only are cosplay groups, but there's specific ones that focus on different aspects of what it is that you want to cosplay. Like in our event, we do Star Wars. That actually has three or four of its own. Now, Gretchen, can you tell us about a few of those that are on the national level?
You mean like the 501st, the Rebel Legion, the Mandalorian Mercs. There's also some lightsaber groups.
Yeah, and those are just some of the ones out there. And depending on what kind of a character you want to play would depend on the group that you would seek out and join. Now, these groups do have their requirements. You have to do costuming to their standards. They have to approve it in a lot of cases, that type of a thing. One of the other things I found that's both in Seattle and Portland is something called the Superhero Alliance. And those are all of your Marvel, all of your DC characters, those type of things. And they have some really, really interesting, I mean, just absolutely incredible costumes. From some of what I've seen, it's just like they stepped off the screen. So all of that absolutely does exist. We'll get a little bit more information on this out on social media for you. But check it out. And the best thing to do is just look them up on Facebook, Twitter, or call them or go through their website, depending on how they have their communication set up. They'll usually invite you to come to some kind of a meeting or something. In most cases, these seem to be held in restaurants or someplace like that. And then you kind of go from there. So, Gretchen, okay. I'm going to ask you the next question here, because this is one for you to answer. And this one, I think, kind of is a big question for you. Listener asks, why do you like Star Wars so much?
Okay, I gave this some serious thought. And the truth of the matter is, I love science fiction and fantasy in general. So there's the basis for the whole thing. I liked Farscape, Babylon 5, Star Trek, all kinds of different types of science fiction. So I had to ask myself, why do I like Star Wars just a little bit more than the others. And I really took a good look at it. And the other groups, you know, like Firefly, have fighters and smugglers and blasters. Well, so does Star Wars. What does Star Wars have that's different? Star Wars has the Force. Star Wars has Jedi Knights. The Force and the Knights. That's what is so very different for me in the Star Wars universe. And that's what pulls me in. So I guess maybe I have some deep-seated desire to be a space knight.
No, that totally makes sense. I mean, you know, as an avid cosplayer of Palpatine, the Jedi give us something to do. So it's, you know.
Thanks a lot. We'll take you out.
And all of that uses the Force. We just know how to use it better. So it's... No, I know we've had a lot of fun with this. And one of the other things that I do like about Star Wars is that it's always been very inclusive. Pretty much anybody mm-hmm. that's a fan can participate in some way and do kind of what they want to do and what they like to do. And it's always been very open. It's like a big giant family in a way.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Oh, looks like we have another question here. How has technology changed job searches?
Now, this is an interesting question, too, and trying to get complete and proper information. We've also done some research. In fact, next week, we're going to have a guest on the show that's a specialist in this area that's going to talk about recruiting, resumes, all of this stuff in the technology age. But this has changed a lot. The way that you apply, the way that you do things, there's all kinds of online job searches. And I found that there's both good and bad from this type of a thing. It's a lot easier to get out there and get to good people and get your job. But on the same token, I've seen the other side of the coin where when I put a resume out, I ended up getting on all these lists for these spammers. So I'll get these, we have a job that's immediate in, you know, some state far away and it's a scam. So you have to be careful of both ends of it. And Jenny's going to get be on, with Vanderhouwen is going to be on the show next week to tell us about the specifics of this, both good and bad, and how to do your resume and how to set things up properly for working within kind of this information technology age.
That sounds like some really useful information. Glad to hear somebody's looking at this. Our next question is from Mariah Crosby. The question is, are wireless networks at Starbucks safe?
So another great question. This has been a week of great questions. And this is actually something, too, I think that we're going to expand upon a little bit in future segments. But an answer to this question, and not just picking on Starbucks, this really applies to anywhere that has these open Wi-Fi networks. So whether it's Starbucks specifically or any place that offers these type of services, you do want to be careful. Are they safe? Yes and no. And here's what I mean by that answer. I know that's not a very specific, but you would definitely want to avoid doing things like banking transactions or anything like that that would use private information over an open network. The reason being is because since you can get on it, anybody else can. And what that allows is if you did have someone that was trying to hack information or that type of thing, conceivably they could get in there and see what's going on that network. So from a standpoint, and specifically on the Starbucks question, they do what they can to make it as secure as possible, but you just want to be smart. If you go on and just are doing some browsing, sending some email, that type of thing, that's one thing. But anything where you would need to get on with a password, probably don't do it. And if you absolutely have to, make sure that you have the padlock on the browser and the green bar and that the site you're going to is secured. All right. So
that's like good advice.
It is. And I think, you know, definitely something we'll want to look into. We're out of time actually for our Q&A today. We have a question that we're going to push off to next week and we'll pick it up then. Send us your questions. Please keep them coming. That's how we do our programming. Be part of the show. Userfriendlyshow.com. One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter. And the podcast is available at theanswerportland.com. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. We're here to talk about a little bit of the history of the show. Where do we get this topic? Well, we got it from you. This is a question that came in, and we get a lot of our programming from your questions, so be a part of this show. Send them in, userfriendlyshow.com or One User Friendly on social media. Jeremy Gretchen, welcome.
Hi there.
Hello.
So the question that we had come in is,
how do we get started in doing a radio show? And it's an interesting question. I mean, it goes back, what, 5 years now, I think.
Something like that.
That we started at the mall down in Reno. Gretchen, I think it was you and me originally, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was you mostly. And I don't know how you talked me into agreeing to do it because I didn't want to.
I believe it was chloroform and duct tape.
yeah, I was just there for the fun. So
yeah, and Jeremy didn't even say anything. He was just kind of acting as like helper, like producer guy.
That was the gopher.
Yeah, I remember that in that studio. And when we first started, the show was a half hour, and season one's actually still up on the website, and people do listen to it every so often. So I will apologize now.
Yeah, but, we can.
Can you hear the harmonica in it?
Oh, you can. Yeah, and you can hear the drill. So what we're talking about with that is we were in a studio that was in a burned out mall. And by burned out, I mean kind of out of, you know, where it had gone out of business and the original stores were long gone and they were kind of releasing it to whoever they could. And I don't know, Gretchen, what did you think of that studio?
Well, first of all, it was open.
Yeah, there were no doors.
It was open to the mall. So anybody walking by, people having conversations, babies crying, people warming up their harmonicas and trumpets, people pounding on the wall, hanging up signs could be heard.
Yeah. And this first station that we were on had a lot of shows like that. We had our 30 minutes and directly following us was the harmonica hour. Now, this guy was actually really good at playing the harmonica. But the problem is listening to it for an hour was one thing, but listening to him warm up while we were trying to record was entirely another.
Yeah, that was pretty intense.
So, and then,
but they had no seals on anything. Anybody could wander in and wander out and say stuff, and it would be picked up by all the microphones, no matter what.
It could have been really bad.
It didn't. I mean, you could have had some really interesting things. And I think we were going out live at that time too, so you didn't really have a.
We had no safety at all.
No, so. And I remember we were doing the news. That was one of the things that you had me do, and I had it all typed up, and I would read it.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I remember that.
I had no idea what to say.
Well, you know, we were learning how to do it too, but it did sound a little bit like this, and you know, it was.
I wasn't hiding the fact that I was reading.
No, but you know, you got to start somewhere. And I know my first time actually on the air, which was before we started the show, was on doing this thing for Google Glass, and I'm a computer coder. I mean, that's what I've always done, and the idea of that is that you generally don't do a lot of stuff that is that outgoing. So I was nervous the 3 nights before I went on this, and it was like a 30-second thing, no big deal. And I knew everything about Google Glass because I was developing for it. And we went in there and went on, and I think it was NPR or a station like that.
Yeah, it was NPR.
Yeah. And then had a lot of fun with it and figured out this is something that's really incredibly cool to do.
Yeah, you sounded real natural, and I felt sorry for the other fellow.
Yeah, the other fellow, I think, had been given a script with like one line, and then he was questioned on it for 5 minutes. That would have made me nervous.
Yeah. And then our next area where we set up shop was in your home office.
Yeah. We recorded my home studio office for a while, and this was it because being down there weren't a lot of studios available. And after we had finished with the mall thing, we went to another studio that was local, and they couldn't figure out how to turn the board on. And Jeremy, I know you had to deal with that.
Yeah, that was fun. He was very, very professional about the idea of his business. But when we were there that day, it just seemed like everything went wrong.
I mean,
he tried to blame it on you.
Yeah, somehow I'm responsible.
I remember that. And they couldn't even get the mics on in the booths, much less calls and all that.
And somehow that's my fault. So, yeah. You know, whatever. I can take some responsibility, but
There was another factor. It was suspiciously strange, like maybe he'd been imbibing something.
Yeah, I got that feeling too. I can't prove it, so I don't know.
But yeah.
There definitely felt like something was off there. So, but that's where it all kind of began. All of us had worked on some stuff before. Back in Las Vegas days, we opened a number of movies, big screen movies on the Las Vegas Strip for the red carpet walks. And I think that was our first taste of actually doing performing, really. We did Renaissance fairs and some stuff like that too, but the first one to really be in the acting community, and it was great. And then it's just developed into the show we have now, which has been a lot of fun.
it's because we're nerds and geeks and other people apparently like what we talk about. So I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I do too. And there's a lot of exciting stuff upcoming. This is User Friendly. We'll be back after the break. User Friendly 2.0.
Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Joining me now are Savannah Bramer and David Yost, FEMA spokespersons. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
First and foremost, did I pronounce your names correctly?
Yeah.
Good, good. That's always a good start. So with the earthquakes that have been happening down in Southern California, I know this has become a big deal on top of the list, but just in general, we wanted to talk a little bit about technology and natural disasters like an earthquake. And to start with, in the event of a disaster such as an earthquake, what is best for communication?
Well, it's going to be the method that works. We really appreciate that you're helping get this information out to the public. And I believe that's via radio. And radio is one of the communication methods that may still be operational. So it really just depends on what's working at the time. Systems can get overwhelmed if they're still operational, so you may not be able to make a phone call easily. We do encourage people to use alternate methods such as texting, as well as using social media if available. There may also be communication from your local emergency manager, so there could be an alert that gets sent to your phone, television, radio. So we just ask people to stay informed with whatever method is available at the time.
Okay, yeah, and that makes sense. I've actually heard that texting can be a little bit easier on the system and it takes less resources. And it would seem like one of the things is the emergency responder's ability to communicate as well. So you want to get out there, but also be able to leave those channels available for those that absolutely need it. So, okay, are there any systems for a person in an impacted area to let their relatives know that they are safe?
So there's one system from the American Red Cross, and it allows people to put their name and information onto a list to say that they are safe and well. And so those, they may be activated at the time of the disaster, and that's one resource to turn to, and that's exactly what it's designed for. If you can't necessarily reach folks in a traditional method, this is the alternate.
Okay. Then I'm going to throw this one in at you from the first question. How important are services like radio to be able to get information?
Critical. We look at information as a commodity that is as important as food and water. Information is what helps you be able to make the right decisions. And so without a good line of situational awareness, which could come from whether it's your friends and family and neighbors, we encourage people to reach out and check on their neighbors if communication methods are down. Some folks may have a working cell phone signal. It will depend on their service. And so it's just it's casting a wide net of everything that's available. So some smartphones are equipped with radio capability. And then if your car is operational, you have a radio there in the event that folks do not have, say, a radio, a battery-powered radio is powered out.
Okay, and that totally makes sense. Go ahead.
And you can put like a radio in your preparedness kit, correct?
Yes, that's a great idea.
Yeah, and I know they make ones that actually will work on a crank and stuff too. So if you don't have power and don't have batteries, you would still have that option. And I know that my cell phone actually has a radio built into it as well. So it does seem like that would make a lot of sense to be able to get information in a way that might not work and have some, you know, backup power sources and that type of a thing. And I know we talked about texting freeing up the communication lines, but is texting better than calling on a mobile phone?
We know we thought with when the Seahawks won the Super Bowl that people couldn't necessarily make phone calls out of Seattle. So we know that this can happen in a disaster and it can happen at a celebratory moment. So text messaging can be the more reliable method to communicate. So just as you said, as a way to kind of keep the lines clear for more critical communication, if text messaging is an option, we encourage folks to use it.
Now, internet phones like your VoIP and that type of things, in a disaster, will they work and is it okay to use them?
So it's going to depend on the service provider as well as power. I believe internet phones typically do require power to operate, and they definitely need an internet connection. So if those two services are down, then no, they will not work. Depending on how it's connected to data, if it's the radio communication, that could be an option. Sometimes they go through satellite. But again, you've got to have the power infrastructure available. So it really just depends on how severe the impact is to our communication infrastructure.
So let me throw one last one out at you. In the event of a major natural disaster, and let's say communication is completely down, what is recommended as the first thing to do other than totally freaking out, which is what I would do?
The first thing to do is check on your own personal well-being and safety. And then if you are well and able, if you can check on your neighbors, friends, and family locally. And personal preparedness, that's probably the key part of all of this, is what do you have available to sustain yourself? We anticipate that communities may be isolated. So if you cannot access communities via roads in order to deliver resources, people may be on their own. So we encourage people to know basic first aid, to have food on hand should they need it, to think about their personal needs, if they have prescriptions that they need to take, or if it's prescription glasses, or if they have mobility challenges, what are the measures that they need to take for their own personal preparedness? Our federal resources will be at the ready as best as we can, but if we can't get down the road to deliver those resources, we need to rely on locals to take care of themselves until we can get there.
I think a point in that would be to identify, if you can, like community centers that you can go to and receive aid. So maybe find out like where your local schools, churches, things of that nature are. That way you kind of do a line of sight communication. I mean, people that you see, you can actually tell them, hey, I'm okay. And then if it ends up being a distribution point for aid, then that works out.
So that's a great point. And I would also add, checking with your local emergency managers if they may have alerts set up already that you can sign up for, and just being aware of what other steps you can take locally. Just as David said, where can you meet up if you need to? Another thing that you can do in family planning is designate a location for everybody to meet if you can't talk to each other. So we actually have some really great resources on ready.gov. And one of them is specifically how you can plan. There's a document on creating your family emergency communication plan, and I would recommend folks taking the time to look at that and have a conversation with their loved ones to talk about their own personal preparedness.
All right, Savannah, David, thank you so much for joining us. And to everybody listening, being ready in advance is a big deal on these type of things. Have your plan in place. Have food and water on hand. And be ready to go. They say we're going to have the big one here at some point, probably during our lifetimes, and we don't know when that is, so it's coming right up. User Friendly will be back after the break.
Welcome back to User Friendly 2.0. A lot of good information out there. We've had earthquakes in California. We've had earthquakes in Seattle. And now we've had earthquakes in California again in Northern California, in two different places. Here in Portland,
The
West Coast is shaking. It's waking up. Haven't had anything here in Portland yet, but everybody tells us the big one is coming probably during our lifetimes. So our friends from FEMA were on to tell us a little bit about what to do and how to do it. One of the interesting things is that one of our biggest forms of technology that we still use is radio right here. And the reason for that is because A, everybody has one. B, most people have one in their car. So if the power's out, the internet's down, everything's inaccessible, you still at least have the battery on your car and you can still at least get information that way. One of the other things I wanted to touch upon too was from our friends over at Google. If you do have internet access, there are all kinds of ways to check in. And one of the things that Google's doing, especially with all of the shaking that's been going on lately, is they've added some functions and are continuing to Google Maps to allow you to be able to check in and report problems that are going on. So if you're in a community and the bridge is out or the road is blocked or something's going on, you can actually go onto your Google Maps and go into the interface and report what's up. You can also check in and let your friends and family know that you're safe. Facebook has a function for that as well. So if the internet's working, there's a lot of things you can do. But if you're completely cut off, if it's really the big one, listen to the radio and we'll get you the information that you need. All right. So been a very interesting show here today. I love being able to get the experts on, and I really, really enjoyed your questions. Gretchen, I think you did too.
Yeah, I did. They were good questions.
So please keep them coming in. We're actually going to pick up a couple of topics on that, and we'll be able to get some more information and kind of dig down into these things. Next week, we have two wonderful guests. Ginny Glates from Vanderhauen, I hope I'm pronouncing her name right, is going to be on to tell us about how to get a job in Job Market 2.0. How do you get your resume online? How do you deal with being able to promote yourself properly in that kind of a market? And how do you avoid the scammers? All of that will be up here next week on the show. In addition, we have an attorney, Joel Murray, who is a specialist in entertainment law. And we've been working on a number of different things, everything from being able to do copyrights to publishing to music to bands to all of the different things involved in that. He's going to be able to answer some questions, which means send us your questions for him. One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter. I say it, I'll say it again, userfriendlyshow.com. I really, really appreciate that, because everything that you send in, we can get all of this different information out to you and be able to be on topic with what you need to hear. Podcast, theanswerportland.com. We will talk to you next week. This is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2019, User Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the host and not necessarily User Friendly Media Group, Inc. or this station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Podcast available at TheAnswerPortland.com or UserFriendlyShow.com.